When you invest in ETFs, your capital is at risk. This show is for professional investors only.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Thematic Matters, the new thematic investing podcast from Han ETF, Europe's most extensive thematic ETF issuer. So today I'm delighted to say we're joined by Gabriella Herculano, who's a CEO and co-founder of iClimate Earth. So iClimate Earth is a fintech company which works with Han ETF, including to provide the iClimate Global Decarbonization Enablers Index. So of course, we're going to focus on climate change and sustainable investing today. So Gabby, thanks for joining.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
So to start, maybe you could just kind of explain what iClimate Earth is and what your kind of mission and purpose is.
I'm delighted to. So we are a London-based green fintech. We are 3 years old. We started the business because we had a conviction that it was very important to shift the narrative when it comes to climate investments. Most of the decarbonization strategies, and by the way, I do love the name of your podcast, Thematic Matters, because we couldn't agree more. Most of the ETFs and indices that tell the story of decarbonization, most of them tell the story of decarbonization as a cost line item. It's usually Microsoft, Google, and Amazon that are in line with Paris Agreement. We do understand why that was at one point thought to be a very relevant thing to do. Let's elevate and put together strategies that represent the companies that are committed to reducing their emissions by more than 7.6%, which is the science of Paris Agreement, still trying to limit global warming to 1.5 degrees. And that issue also has a lot to do with what is wrong with ESG, which is the my ESG scorecard is better than yours approach. So we wanted to really shift the narrative and focus on decarbonization as the problem solvers, decarbonization as revenue. So the companies where the products and services are in line with solving the issues. And that is a profound difference. Ultimately, what we're trying to represent on the indices are the companies that preclude emissions from ever taking place. It's such a clear strategy. And we end up with a very different methodology and composition. So that is what iClimate is our single focus. We're determined to do is to go really deep on the analysis of the solutions, so the technologies, the impact of it, which we use tangible metrics, not ESG scorecards, and then of course the financial aspects of it. So we really think it's a holistic approach, and we have really this laser focus. We only care about the companies that can really decarbonize the planet.
Thanks, Gabby. So Han ETF uses one of your indices for one of the ETFs, the iClimate Global Decarbonization Enablers Index. And as kind of you alluded to already, it's quite a unique index. Maybe you could give a broad overview of the index, kind of its methodology, and also to kind of give us a feel of the sort of companies that are included in it.
Absolutely. So we triangulated three elements that we thought were incredibly relevant for us to be able to represent exactly these relevant solutions that preclude emissions from ever taking place. How do we develop a rules-based, data-driven approach that give us that broad, comprehensive set of solutions? So that is that triangulation. Back when we first started the methodology, EU taxonomy was not in place. So it was the UNPRI determination of what is defined as a green product or service. So green revenue is a very important metric for us. We look for companies with material green revenue. The second data point is this idea of the technical term is potential avoided emissions, is the megatons of CO2 equivalent that are never emitted into the atmosphere. And there is a methodology that was put in place, a whole framework developed by Mission Innovation. The gentleman that invited me to present at COP26 last year and invited me again to present now at current COP27, his name is Dennis Pamling. With Bill Gates' money, he started this not-for-profit called Mission Innovation, and they developed this framework. How do we calculate? It's a tangible metric, forward-looking metric, as opposed to looking back and seeing how much, we refer to this as less harm. how much a company was able to cut their emissions. Here we're looking at how relevant is the replacement of a business as usual. So let's say you drive an internal combustion engine from point A to point B, or you drive a Tesla from point A to point B, and that Tesla is actually charged with a solar rooftop. So we calculate the difference between the high emissions of business as usual, internal combustion engine for transportation, with the much lower emissions, again, the Tesla example, and that delta is the potential avoided emissions. So that's point number two in our methodology. And the third point is the technology aspects of it. And we leverage the open research done by Project Drawdown in the US. Is another not-for-profit that was started by this American environmentalist. His name is Paul Hawken. And they looked, a group of 100 scholars that over 3 years looked at all the existing technologies that were ready to scale up and bring the planet to carbon neutrality. It was the first very detailed roadmap of how the planet could come to net zero by 2050. And he calculated the different scenarios. So what we did, which again, I love when you say it's quite unique because we do think it is, was this triangulation of the three aspects. Potential avoided emissions as per mission innovation, EU taxonomy as what is a green revenue product and service, and the technologies. And with that, we developed methodology, rules-based data-driven, that allow us to find these companies that are very, very relevant. So give a flavor of what is in the index is a comprehensive set of solutions we wanted to bring to market, kind of like a one-stop shop. Thematic matters, couldn't agree more. And it's important that we have the end, not the or. It's a bit premature to call winners. So don't go, it's not about going all in on Tesla. There's Tesla, XPeng, NIO, BYD, own the relevant solutions, and let's not just call electric transportation as the winners. We have the hard to abate transportation as well. That's the heavy duty transportation, where fuel cells and green hydrogen may be a very relevant solution. So we have about 10 companies that are producers of electrolyzers and fuel cells, like Plug Power, Bloom. We have over 10 names that represent that that space. Another very interesting set of companies that are quite unique to our index are the companies in line with what's called vehicles to grid and virtual power plants. As we decarbonize the grid, that process entails a lot of digitalization and decentralization. In other words, we are producing more and more electricity at the point of consumption. That's what solar panels do. And there are companies like Stem, Fluence, Proterra, that are very linked to that idea of producing electricity at the point of consumption, optimizing and aggregating all these assets that are quite dispersed, right? Very distributed, and aggregating then, of course, based on technology for the benefit of the grid. And it's quite unique. You look through, you know, the most established indices and therefore ETFs that are out there telling the story of green energy, and they really miss all these very exciting new developments in the green energy space. So that's another aspect of why we think thematic matters. You cannot ignore the very relevant solution that are being brought to market by some very exciting companies, but you have to have that good mix of the more larger cap established players like Schneider Electric and Orsted or EDP, but also have these newer players, companies in the 2 billion market cap like Stem, for example, that there's not a market in where we're going to be solving renewable energy intermittence where Stem is not going to be a very relevant player. So we think that we got that right balance. And we achieved that with this unique methodology that gave us the opportunity to represent the broad set of solutions.
Thanks, Gabby. You kind of touched on some of the arguments there that you made in a recent article you wrote for the Han ETF Thematic Review, kind of arguing why green investors should think thematically, and that the you know, the S&P 500 as a kind of investing in funds that track the S&P 500 has served investors well over the last a few decades, but actually going forward, they need to kind of think more about what this kind of energy transition actually means. Maybe you could summarize that argument for us.
This is the idea. We are talking about doing things we've never done before. We've never been able to produce electricity at the point of consumption. We've never had grids that are predominantly renewable energy based, and we all know that renewable energy is intermittent. So for us to solve that problem, we're going to have to do long duration energy storage. We're going to have to store solar and wind electricity and use it at another point in time. So for us to be able to do that, well, we are developing new technologies and we're doing things that we haven't done before. So it's striking that balance between the incumbent players like, again, Schneider Electric or Siemens, companies that have, in some of them do come from more exposure in the oil and gas, and we do negatively screen, so we don't allow that contamination. You have to be really very much on the green side of things. But then you have this balance of the new solutions. And there's a framework that we like very much, which was developed by this guy, Bill Nussey, who is became a friend, a very nice guy. And he wrote a fantastic book called Freeing Energy. And he talks about the 5 degrees of innovation when it comes to the climate technology space. So you have order number one, which is the pure kind of commoditized solutions. Think of the solar panels themselves or the inverters. And in this market that we're going through this massive sell-off and that has hurt a lot of the companies in our universe, we see that. We see that in 2022, a few of the companies that are performing well above 50% year to date are companies like Enphase, that is a jewel, is the leader in the microinverter segment, or a company like Meyer Burger, that is a German producer of high-end solar panels. So again, it's the very kind of basic side of the technology. I think both sides of the aisle, if we can use that expression, agree that yes, there is going to be a lot of demand for solar panels and for inverters that go hand in hand. Then we have the second degree of innovation, where you have the companies that provide services, companies like Sunrun, that they are the largest residential installer of solar panels in the US market. So that is a service provider. And then you start elaborating those services more. That is, for example, a company like STEM, which is a third order of innovation, is battery as a service, is when you start having these companies that aggregate a lot of the technology. So think about the batteries behind the meter being used to the benefit of the grid as that virtual power plant that I was referring to before. A company like STEM aggregating and managing those assets. And then you end up with on the most kind of comprehensive and disruptive innovation level, the fifth order of innovation, you have a whole new economy, which is pretty much what green hydrogen is. So when you think about thematic, you need to have that, you know, relevant balance of the key players across the spectrum of innovation. Is really too much volatility, you know, just to represent all the companies that will be in line with a completely new industry that is developing, which is green hydrogen. There is going to be a lot of volatility in that strategy. What a market like this is showing us is that, you know, time value of money when interest rates go up will continue to hurt the more forward-looking growth stories. So it's important to balance out with companies that have currently already very high margins, like a Tesla or Enphase, that is very much a jewel. So thematic matters. Thematic matters a great deal when it comes to a green strategy.
So on the surface this year, it really should have been one where renewable energy or green energy stocks kind of shine. We had Russia's invasion of Ukraine, kind of confirmed Europe's need to remove its dependency on Russian imports, and obviously renewable energy plays a role in that. We've seen the Inflation Reduction Act in the US. And then for some of the kind of individual companies you mentioned, Enphase Energy or Sunrun, they've seen a very strong sales or revenue growth. But at the same time, the annual performance of a lot of green energy and kind of green growth stocks, as you call them, has not been so great. Could you explain kind of what this disconnect kind of is caused by?
Yeah, it's this coexistence of green growth and brown value will persist, Tom, in our view, for a couple of years. But when you put together the inflation that we're seeing and the global response by the different central banks of just increasing interest rates, well, then that hurts, again, the companies that have more of that forward-looking cash flow. So investors went risk-off, and they are just pricing what free cash flow they can see. And they're finding that free cash flow in the energy space. And energy space in the US is very much fossil fuel. So, of course, Chevron, Exxon, they're having a fantastic performance because investors are happy to pay for that free cash flow that they can see in the next, let's call it 4 to 8 quarters. And we think that that is we're in this massive repricing because there's no doubt that the free cash flow in the future of the companies that are really solving the real problems, again, how we decarbonize the grid, how we decentralize the grid, how we solve renewable energy intermittency. But beyond energy, we have many other problems, the plastic problem, the way we produce food that has a very high carbon footprint. So all of these solutions, you know, in our view, there's a very big addressable market and a very big need and demand for these solutions. And they are deflationary in nature. And here we are with a very big inflationary problem, very much caused by fossil fuel. We actually call this fossil inflation, which will most likely be persistent. So this is a conundrum. Somebody will be very right, somebody will be very wrong. Very recently, the International Energy Agency just issued their World Energy Outlook. And for that in very big exercise in modeling, they are calling or expect fossil fuel, broadly speaking, to peak in emissions by 2025. Well, that is telling us that there are three very big trends in the world. The U.S. is decarbonizing transportation. That's the whole electrification, the big demand for crude is the U.S. in transportation, and passenger vehicle is a big chunk of that. In Europe, of course, we're trying to replace natural gas for obvious reasons. Ukraine being invaded by Russia just exacerbated that problem of natural gas that we already had. And yes, we do have Asia trying to replace coal. China has been doing a lot to ramp up their renewable energy capacity in the most spectacular way. And that is very much to replace goal. That is kind of the top short-term priority. So we see these three trends, which means that, of course, we all would like it to be faster and accelerated, but we are doing these things in these three big markets for natural gas, crude, and coal. But still, investors are seeing that that short-term cash flow, and they're trying to price accordingly. The problem with that is that you still have to price beyond the next, let's say, 2 years, where there's still definitely going to be potentially that upward sloping in consumption of fossil fuel. But what about what happens next? Because the demand destruction that we see exactly because fossil fuel is so expensive, it just prompts that acceleration of the transition. It becomes a very, it doesn't matter how you vote or if you're a tree hugger or not, it becomes a very clear no-brainer, economic decision. I'm going to put a solar panel because I want to save money day one, and I want to have that stability of that cost and stability of supply as well. So you put all these things together, and it's the most exciting thing to be following, and it sounds like a bunch of contradiction. How do we reconcile? How do we reconcile the market cap of Saudi Aramco that is so tied to, you know, a $2 trillion market cap, so tied to fossil fuel, a product that the world is very vocally trying to replace, with, for example, a company like Tesla that is doing all the right things when it comes to green transportation and green energy, now at sub $700 billion market cap. So investors need to be very, very nimble, because if you are with a lot of your allocation tied to the business as usual, the industries that are being disrupted and replaced, you have to time your way out. That's, for us, there's no doubt about that. And while if you have the green thematic strategies, then, if you are a long-term investor, it's extremely likely that those in the long term, those strategies will perform extremely well.
Thanks, Gabby. And a couple of mentions there of the Inflation Reduction Act in the US. I was going to kind of give a broad overview of what it meant. Obviously, it was a very big bit of news for the renewable energy and electric vehicle space. And then also, right now, kind of there's obviously been the US midterms. There wasn't quite the Republican surge of support that was expected. But even so, it kind of is raised questions about, say, the political vulnerability of the US commitment to renewable and clean energy and electric vehicle solutions. So I'm going to kind of explain what the Inflation Reduction Act is, and then also kind of what your view is on say, the potential vulnerability of kind of this very policy-driven kind of news, how vulnerable it is to political changes in the US.
Yeah, the Inflation Reduction Act, I couldn't love the name more, because you're putting together the idea of solar panels, solar rooftops, and stationary battery and electric vehicle with inflation reduction. And that's very much what these technologies are. Again, it's an important distinction. Solar panels and batteries are technologies. It's not fuel. So we get better the more that we produce them. And we've been in this deflationary curve for over 40 years. And in the last 10 years, we're talking about a very dramatic reduction in the cost of solar panels and batteries, over 80%, generally speaking. So the more that we produce, the more the prices drop. So now if we're going to see that acceleration, then we are likely to, given the empirical evidence, continue to be on that downward slope. So what is it that the US government did was to give fiscal stimulus for the adoption. So we're putting the consumer center stage. We're seeing the US say, okay, here we have very important solutions that allow users to save money day one. So let's give a fiscal stimulus to further prompt adoption. So you put the fiscal stimulus together with the demand destruction, because right now we got, now is a little bit better, but we got at $6 per gallon at the pump in California. That is very expensive. So you see consumers trying to figure out what can we do to reduce our cost, the cost to heat the homes, the cost to put gasoline in the internal combustion engine cars, of course, for electricity. And then here again, we are in this very fortunate situation in that all these new technologies, they not only get cheaper and cheaper, but they also have a very low carbon footprint. So, of course, we're talking about electric vehicles, the solar panels, the stationary batteries, but also the heat pumps, and also insulation of the homes, and smart meters and smart thermostats. So all the things that enhance energy efficiency are the very short-term solutions to this energy crisis. So the most impactful energy is the energy that you never consume. And then, of course, if you are a homeowner and you find the technologies that help you, is not the time to charge your car or do a load of laundry, it's called demand response. And our gadgets are here to tell us, to help us optimize our consumption. So that's exactly what the Biden administration tried to accomplish with the IRA. So it's a fiscal stimulus for the consumers that are buying electric vehicles, not just new electric vehicles to the tune of $7,500, but also used vehicles around $4,000. They also extended what is called the investment tax credit, which is the credit that you get when you buy a solar system installation for your house. And that is a 10-year fiscal stimulus, about 30%. So it's very material. Now, earnings season, we are going through the third quarter results, and we're starting to see, again, Enphase and Sunrun reporting very solid revenue figures. And that is very much a consequence of that demand destruction and this energy crisis that we've been is not yet the IRA. IRA is going to, the bill was signed into law on August 16th. We're now going in the process where the executive branch, there's going to be quite a few of levels of the executive branch that will be involved in the implementation of the IRA. So we are not even yet seeing the full extent of the acceleration of those solutions, because now in December is when we expect to have much more clarity in how the different agencies will be implementing the legislation of the IRA. Now, when it comes to the new, most likely the Senate will stay with the Democrats, and the lower house will now turn to the Republicans. We don't have for the next 2 years a very big risk of the IRA being questioned or derailed and the execution being challenged, because Biden continues to be in the White House for the next 2 years and he will have full veto powers. And we're actually going to have this situation where hopefully the Senate stays with the Democrats. So that is in place and will be in place for the next 2 years. And I think that then is when we're going to see a very massive acceleration of the adoption of all these different technologies. We will see the companies, we really expect to see a very dramatic increase in revenue, and then therefore comes the profitability. If there is a silver lining in this very difficult market, in this downturn, is that it brings back discipline in terms of capital allocation, and all the companies having to make sure that they're being more prudent and managing costs very closely. So there's always, you know, a positive in everything. So we think that we have not even started to see the full benefits of the IRA across the companies in our universe.
Thanks, Gabby. You mentioned in one of your previous answers about China, and it's kind of a leader in renewable energy, also electric cars. However, kind of recently, politics in China has made investors a bit more wary, some viewing it as maybe uninvestable. Could you kind of give an overview of how important China is for the global energy transition, how important Chinese companies are for it, and then also kind of your views on investing in China?
It's one of those points that are, I think there's a lot of misunderstanding. There's no decarbonization without China. This is so clear to us. There's no decarbonization without China. In one hand, because China is the biggest emitter, emits more than the US and the European Union and Japan together. And that is very much because of coal. So like I was saying, the first most pressing need is for us to globally decommission all the coal and replace that with the more price competitive renewable energy. So on one hand is about China decarbonizing China. But on the other hand is the technology. This cost curve that I was referring to, this downward slope that we've been on both the battery sides and the solar panels, we have China to thank for. China in 2008, 9, and 10 decided to invest massively in the production of solar panels. It was very tough for the European incumbent players to then compete. We saw some companies in Europe and in the US as well on the solar manufacturing side go bankrupt, because it is hard to compete with China. But the reality of it is that China has been able to bring that cost curve down because they invested so much on the key technologies, also on the battery side. We talk so much about Tesla, but in China, 30% of all the electric vehicles being sold are sold in China. So China, again, is decarbonizing China in a very material way. 75% of all the offshore wind that was commissioned in 2021 was in offshore projects in China. So China is decarbonizing China in a very material way. So going back to the electric vehicles, you know, we talk a lot about Tesla, but there are three Teslas equivalent in China. That's NIO, BYD, and XPeng. These are three billionaires that current billionaires that but entrepreneurs that started the companies with the same conviction that there was a better way. and a way to leverage technology and put into redesigning cars. NIO has this very exciting new approach of swapping batteries. So they split the car ownership from the battery itself. BYD is very well known for being a company that Warren Buffett has a material stake. So the problem with the third term of President Xi is that he's been very vocal about his prosperity policy and his dislike for the billionaires that want to have more power and then, of course, have a lot of wealth in their hands. I mean, it is ultimately still the Communist Party and President Xi in his third term, and that is the concern, will attempt to have more oversight over these companies that have been so successful in bringing down costs of the key technologies and also bringing to market a lot of very exciting solutions and products. So that's the concern when it comes to green investment. So I'm not referring to Alibaba and Jack Ma and how potentially uninvestable the pure technology names are. I'm very much focusing on the green side. There's no way that these companies will slow down, in our view, their R&D and their constant pursuit of lower costs and more efficiency, more productivity. So ignoring all the free cash flow that is coming out of the names in China and ignoring the fact that, a lot of people say we're in the hands of China. China produces more than 75% of all the solar panels. Yet China consumes about 40% of all the solar panels on the planet, produced on the planet. So yes, they are a very relevant source of technology for the Western countries, but they are very much decarbonizing Asia in a material way. And they have been, if anything, just accelerating that their own energy transition. So there's a lot of free cash flow being generated by these companies. So investors ignoring that is something that doesn't make much sense to us.
Thanks, Gabby. So COP27 is ongoing right now, and you actually presented at COP26 last year, and you will be again at COP27 this year. Perhaps you could kind of tell us, give us a preview of what you're going to argue this year.
Yes, so I present at the UNFCCC panel discussion where we talk about the metrics. We talk about how to use the tools that can accelerate the energy transition. So going back to that first question on our methodology and this effort done by Mission Innovation to come up with a framework, which is that potential avoided emissions framework. So we quantify, we look through a lot of the companies in our universe and we attempted to quantify their impact, how much their products and services preclude emissions from ever taking place. So it's a little bit technical. So let me get into the weeds briefly here with you. So that Paris Alignment Agreement, and we're still talking about the 1.5 degrees, is 7.6% annual reduction so that we can cut our emissions by half by 2030. We're currently emitting about 52 gigatons of CO2 equivalent per year. Okay, so where's this 4.2, give or take, gigatons per year? Where are we going to succeed in precluding those emissions from happening? So that's the denominator. That's what we're looking for. So at the COP26, we were very much talking about calculating that potential avoided emissions. We were asked to present 5 specific cases, which we did for Sunrun, Tesla, Beyond Meat, Zoom. Telepresence is a very relevant solution, of course, and Wind. So we took specific companies like Vestas, Tesla, Zoom, and Beyond Meat, and we calculated their potential avoided emissions all the way to 2030, and we showcased the metric. So it was about how to apply this potential avoided emissions tool. Now, at COP27, we're bringing this to another level when we're saying, yes, there is potential avoided emissions, but with this metric, we can do so much more. And we bring the concepts from finance, time value of money and return on invested capital. So that is time value of carbon and carbon returns. So the CO2 that is not emitted 10 years from now is less impactful than the CO2 that is not emitted now. And that's the carbon accounting and the science behind it. Similarly, we have finite resources. We talk about the trillions, literally, that need to be invested towards that acceleration of the energy transition. Well, with finite resources, you need to make sure that your invisible hand works its way through and that investments go towards the most impactful solutions. So here again, we can take that potential avoided emissions metric to another level, and we look at the dollars per megaton of CO2 equivalent never emitted. Where are we going to find that highest return? In finance, we're so good at that, at the constant looking for the risk-adjusted high rewards. Well, let's use those metrics. So we start with potential avoided emissions, and we take that to another level by considering time value of carbon and the carbon returns. And then we really go through all these different solutions. We have 27 subsegments in our methodology for the index across five different sectors. Where are the companies that have a very material impact in the short term, meaning before 2030, and where that time value of carbon happens together with the carbon returns? An example is telepresence. We can take Zoom, for example, to another level. We all got used to that solution for a very sad reason because of the lockdowns and the pandemic. But here we are. It's a technology. It's like a software. It won't cost much for us to scale that up to a much a larger level. And it can be done in a very impactful way in the very short term, because the infrastructure is already in place. What we then need is to permanently replace what is the high emission business as usual alternative, which is again zigzagging the planet on airplanes. So if we can just, and we did all of that calculation, just replace on a permanent basis the business trips that are very suitable for a very good, you know, communication using Zoom, then we have that impact. And in the very short term, so a very high time value of carbon and a very high carbon return, because we're not talking about a huge investment. So it's quite a technical discussion, but we need to bring that to another level. And we need the lenders that are going to be underwriting a lot of the investments to have this framework in mind and to think about, you know, what projects to finance using this framework. Is this impactful? Does this move the needle? And we think that it's about time that we have forward-looking tangible metrics to really make sure that capital markets will be a source of good.
Thanks, Gabby. That's all we have time for today. Thank you. That was great. If you want to find out any more about iClimate Earth, please head to iClimate.earth. That's www.iClimate.earth. And if you want to find out any more about thematic and sustainable investing, please head to handetf.com. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to share and subscribe.